Hello, I'm Anna Serene, and you're listening to Berlinale's House of Talents.
Movie is like a dream, you know, it's operate like a dream. We try to mimic that experience with technology as well to create more and more towards our biological needs to dream.
At Berlinale Talents, we like to take the time to understand the how and why of filmmaking. In addition to countless shorts and art installations, Apichat Pong Veresetakul has directed 10 feature films, including the enchanting Cemetery of Splendor. The Thai director's unique perspective is encapsulated in his steady use of the camera, which coolly unveils the memories and bodies of his characters. True to his work, this conversation with Juan Diaz Bohorquez, a Talents alumnus and the art director on Veresetakul's most recent film, Memoria, draws us into meditative spaces, inviting us to slowly question filmmaking habits and the rat race of expectations we are all involved in. From the impossibility of nothingness to the seeming nothingness of death, Apichat Pong Veresetakul.
Hey, hello, Api.
Hey, Juan, and hey, everyone.
How are you doing?
I'm very good.
Where are you now?
Well, you can see the hotel room in the Nakhon Phanom. That's a small town by the river, the Mekong River. I'm actually on the journey to create an art project. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but it's about traveling.
Right.
Just along this river.
And what attracted you to that river? What brought you there initially?
Well, it's not far from my hometown, and it's a very important river for the region. And it's where, you know, symbolically it's also important. Like it's a place where my father, Ash, is scattered there. So I always think my dad is there.
Wow.
So kind of visiting father.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful to have that connection with your father and the river. That's so beautiful
yes.
in itself.
Yeah, his particle somewhere.
Exactly. That actually brings us to this idea of nothingness. And you were telling me that this is somehow a journey of yours. And I've been thinking about that a lot since we started thinking about this conversation. Tell us more about this journey of yours. How did it start?
Well, I think nothingness is relevant at this time, but also for me, always relevant. I think it started a few years back when I had a talk with Simon Liang, and someone asked him, "What's your goal in life?" You know, and he answered, "I wish to do nothing." And at first, I thought that's quite a lazy kind of activity. But the more you think about it, it's quite. How you say it keep you thinking, what is nothingness, right? And also it's quite a difficult task to do nothing, because we always do something. And movie is about something, you know, so what is nothingness? So I think the word expand so much of how you approach the world,
yeah.
you know, and in the end, maybe it's about the nothingness of expectation of self, you know. And that kind of coincides with Buddhism in a way that I'm interested in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's many approaches to the idea of nothingness, and often we think of this word, and I will say particularly in the West, on this idea of everything that is taken out of meaning. That the things that have no meaning, this we connected to the void very often, but precisely there is other approaches to nothingness. This approach of not being just one thing, not being defined by expectations and by this kind of
right, yeah. Because like in the beginning of the pandemic, actually nothing. There's nothing on my agenda, nothing on my schedule. And then, you know, you say, oh, what I'm going to do? And then just start to look around and to see the beauty of you know, of the closeness of the people around you or or animals like my dogs, and to spend time, and started to notice the rhythm and the cycle of the season.
Yeah.
But in the end, like this nothingness kind of inspired, you know, to me to, okay, let's grab the camera and shoot something, you know, this thing.
Right.
To become something.
The question,
but
maybe,
you start from nothing. Huh?
Exactly. But the question there is, we start from nothing and we become maybe something, but it's the idea of letting that thing go to a certain degree, to not allow that thing to define us constantly, but maybe the idea of transformation. And now that you're in the river and in this journey river, constantly in flux, constantly in transformation, somehow this nothingness relates to this flux.
Right, exactly. And it's also the beauty of casualness, no? Because either in work, in life, or the talk like right now, because we talked before, like, hey, let's not plan so much, because like when you go to dinner with a friend, you know, you don't plan, right?
Yeah.
Hey, what kind of topic is that on?
With little cards.
Yeah. So I think something fruitful and unexpected and maybe beautiful can emerge, you don't expect.
Mm. Yeah. There is one concept that I've been thinking about for a few years now, and is the I call it narratives of control, which is these stories that somehow define us constantly. So the idea of what we think it's a family, the idea of what we think it's success, the idea of what we think is beauty even. But it's these stories that don't belong to us. And in thinking about nothingness, I was reflecting a lot about the idea of unlearning. Then how do we get rid of all of these expectations and this desire to collect? You were mentioning this challenge that it is, because we are always wanting to collect more knowledge and more memories. And
right, it's also, you know, it's also how we make movies, right? We need to remember, so we need to recreate our memory to cherish, and sometimes I feel that's a trap too. But I don't know, it's something, a dilemma. I think that's why I keep making movies, because of this dilemma, to recreate, but at the same time, it's impossible to recreate a replica, of the experience. So it's only remnants of these dreams, and that you end up creating another reality.
Yeah, it's an altered version of that reality. And what you were saying about trying to capture, also there is a contradiction there, you know, this idea of nothingness, but then we are always aiming to capture the evanescent, the transcendent, and then we fail, and then we try again, and then we fail, and then we try again. And you have done a masterful work on those attempts to capture the evanescent, and your work, it's so beautiful in terms of trying to deal with memory and dream, but it's always this is full of contradiction as well, this attempt.
Yes, and I try to be economical, meaning that I don't like, or I'm not good at kind of making a fiction.
Yeah.
So I'm always based on reality, and to kind of, again, like trying to recreate what I experience and I want to keep, you know. And it's kind of like economic approach, because I feel like story is very precious. I don't want to create, like, bombarded the world with stories, you know, even though it's beautiful, but I feel like what I have already, the story of life, you know, just recreate that, you know, not make it like exponential. And we are like, how you say, drawn in memories. Like, yeah, at least for me, yeah.
No, I agree that there is this, impulse right now to produce and produce and produce in many cases, and this anxiety to always have something more in, or throw something more into the world. But I think there is also this moment of thinking or feeling more how things emerge and the stories emerge from our own experiences and our own journeys. And then also knowing that anything that we put into the world, it's there. And it's a trace in, that we leave in the world as well.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm very interested.
It's an experience, no?
Yeah, exactly. It's an experience for the entire world to a certain degree, every time that is there and connects beyond us.
And it's I think it's tied also to nothingness, that movie is just light, right? So when it's finished, it's gone. so it come back to nothingness. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, it's the experience. And we were talking before, because I mean, I had the pleasure this last year of working with a Pichapong, that was fantastic. But actually, I have not seen the movie finished, even if it's there, because I actually want to experience it properly, because it's this instant of seeing it for the first time. And so
I very envy you. Yeah, because I think I never experienced my own movies because of this working process. And right. I think we all know, you know, filmmakers, we have to watch our film in the editing stage for, I don't know, hundreds of times. Yes. And it kills, you know, this freshness. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to watching Memoria in a proper way when the cinemas are are back into our lives.
Yeah, I was surprised that you didn't see it.
Yeah, because I was very purposefully not, choosing not to see the final movie until I can see it in this experience of this evanescent experience, that it's a different thing in the cinemas.
Yes. And I don't know if you've seen the scene in the river.
Yeah.
And that's something related to nothingness too, because I think when we think about movie, there's something has to happen, right?
Yeah.
And in that film, suddenly it stops, right? It's the time stopped flowing. And that's what I want to experiment, I mean, in that film, about what if there's nothing happen? And what if everything stops? And then how would you react as an audience? And also question, what is a cinema? And yeah, I don't know if I succeed, but we'll see.
What I love about the idea is that to a certain degree, we are constantly in the outside. And suddenly when the movie provides us with this moment of nothingness, then suddenly everything starts happening inside. It's like when we hear our own pulse or our own blood flowing or something.
Yeah, right. And you suddenly need to adjust your own time and your own understanding of movies. Yeah, that's why I am so attracted to so-called experimental films in the beginning when I saw them, those 16mm film or Super 8 and all this thing that is not focused on narrative.
Yeah.
And I found that it's much more for me long-lasting impact, because it has its own universe. It's like meeting another kind of animal that it's hard to forget, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's this moment in which it transcends the anecdote and it actually becomes an experience in itself. I think good stories, good narratives of all kinds, also a building and the experience of a space or a movie, when they become experiences is when they become part of our lives, because we immerse ourselves, because it's not something outside of ourselves, but somehow inside of ourselves. So also the silence and the nothingness in movies, I think it's important in that as well, that allows us to go in the movie and not see it always outside, like the action or like the happening.
Right. Because there's so many things happening in the movie or in life. And sometimes if you have silent or you have a pause, right, you notice that, oh, there's a lot of things.
Yes.
But without a pause, you just like, just go with the flow and you become part of that. Okay. And yeah.
Yeah, and I guess this counts also for our daily life, like when reflecting about this and this idea of, like you mentioned Buddhism and then maybe thinking also about Sartre and his idea of not thing, like of not being a thing, and then this idea of flowing. It all connects to this moment in which we always concentrate in the action and what is happening outside, but then somehow this transformation happens also in that silence when so much is happening and we become of that happening, of that river and that landscape. And
right, because then when you become part of the whole thing and you fail to stop, you just like you start to project, right? You start to project into the future what this flow gonna be, what my position in that flow gonna be. And then you start to suffer because I think it's normal for human being to expect for the worst or negative expectation, because it's a part of the evolution for us to protect ourselves, right? To imagine something harmful, scenarios. Yeah, but I think, you know, we have to get kind of smarter from this seed of evolution.
Yes.
And to learn to stop and to just put this rock out of our shoulder, you know, the rock of expectation. Yeah. And to really just observe, you know, what goes on in your body, in your mind.
Yeah, and actually going back to this idea of stories and accumulation, I was thinking that when we are in this constant action, it's like this constant necessity to move and to be, but it's this alertness that it's somehow what is happening around us and a little bit advertisement and the machine that is behind industries that like keep everything kind of like pushing and pushing. And somehow that always keeps us alert and always like in this state of emergency. And there is no moment of like going back, because I guess we have evolutionarily this idea of alertness, but at the same time, there is also contemplation. And you see it in all animals, that there is moments of alertness, but there is also moments of contemplation. And we have lost a lot of that contemplation part.
Right, right. Because we, especially, I think there's a lot of expectation within yourself and also from others. So we feed on each other's expectation.
Yeah.
And yeah, and you suffer because you always think that at the moment it's not your time yet, or you're not success, so-called successful yet. So you maybe next year or after I finish this movie, or maybe I will create a better movie, or if I finish this script, I will find money. So everything is about expecting and to indicate that now is not okay.
Yeah.
Or where the future is better, yeah. Which is not true. Because you're never gonna, but of course, you know, everyone is thinking like, I'm also thinking of that, but sometimes it's quite good to stop and say, oh, wait a minute, here is super good.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying talking to you, Juan, for example, listening to you. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and at some point, and also thinking in when we are shooting and when we are thinking of a story, is also being explorers into these worlds, like really contemplating and observing, not only claiming for the action, but enjoying the happening, like what is there, and then playing with the audience and actually bringing them into that. But you were mentioning this anxiety of what will come on the future, and thinking about all our processes as storytellers, and sometimes there is this fear of void, the white page, the white space, or the empty space, or sometimes becomes images of a scary thing. How do you, in your practice in general, deal with this moment of beginning or ideas beginning, and to avoid falling for the anxiety of the white page of the writer or the empty space of the...
I think it's just that one needs to accept it. You know, if it's white, it's white. And you just need to really, especially if you want to create something, it sounds cliche, but I'm just waiting for something to click with me. And I don't rush. And if it doesn't click, it doesn't click. And there's one project, actually, I just talked to the foundation that, hey, I don't feel it, something like this, and I apologize. So it's something about being truthful to yourself and how you feel, right? And the same way as when you are creating a film, and when you writing, even though you spend a year on it, and even in the end, if there's something telling you and you try a different way and it doesn't work, I think you need to stop. Mm. And I think it happens a lot in the editing room, and I think I'm pretty infamous for this regard, because I always shoot more than I wanted, and many scene that we spend a lot of money on always end up not in the final film. But sometimes you need to, I think you need to do it and to follow your instinct at that time of the production. And then after the production, it's another time to reflect, and you have to be able to say, okay, this doesn't work, you know. This had to go or something, even though it's a lot of efforts into that. So it's just that you have to be like a really, following. I think it's not also about if it's independent film or a big budget film, but you have to also be really attentive to others too. For the editor, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember this also. Stanley Kubrick was saying that that he was shooting and was one thing, but in the editing he was redirecting his movie. Like, again, he was doing something else. Like, he was doing a second directing of the movie in editing because he couldn't think about the material he got, but in what he needed to do to tell the story. I agree with you that there is these different moments, and then if we get precisely caught by the expectation, and we shoot this, so we should use it. We get trapped as well in like putting everything, like buying a lot of clothes and wanting to put them all.
yeah. But in the moment of buying, if you have money, you should. It's like this director who shot a lot of takes, maybe 50 takes or 100 takes. And then he picked take one or take two just because he can, and just because he needs to prove that the first and the second take are the best, you know? So you need that 100 takes to prove that it's, if you feel like that, yes, you have the means, yes, I would do it too.
Yeah, it reminds me a bit of the journey of Siddhartha, and that the fact that he needed to discard the world to a certain degree to actually let it go finally, or to enter a different state of consciousness. It somehow connects me to that moment in which he's actually by the river and he's observing the river passing. But he already went through many other things, and now he actually understood that this is the place he has to go back to. And I think it's a journey like that.
Right.
Yeah. And what are you up to now? I mean, like, Memoria is finished and is ready to see the cinemas at some point when it opens. And you're now, what are you up to? What is in your mind?
I have some art projects that I'm tackling, and I'm also doing a workshop with university students in Japan. And also working on a new movie project, collaborate with a laboratory in Korea. Mm-hmm. Just like science, you know, because I'm really curious about the science of aging and also death. Mm-hmm. That's also tied to nothingness.
Yes.
And so it's really good to have access to the scientific community and also the laboratory so that we can do a real actual test on cellular aging. Wow. But it's only the beginning. Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, precisely in the idea of passing of time, going into nothingness and our fear or our expectation, you know, like there is this book about the denial of death. And this concept of that everything we do as humans somehow is correlated to the denial of death. And at the same time, all of this cellular science on aging and reversing aging in terms of cellular decadence. And that's a fascinating topic, but at the same time, it really connects to our idea of wanting to be immortal somehow, to not fade into void.
And also, it's really resonate with me, especially last year. I had a friend who passed away, and I didn't expect, but I was, you know, was there in the room when he passed, and it was such a big learning experience that life is just like that, and that in the end, you know, just there's no use, right? Whatever you accumulate. And the moment, because I was with the his partner, and it's something that the living didn't prepare for, you know. Will you resuscitate him? Will you allow the doctor to put the tube into his neck and to maybe he suffer, but maybe he will live for a few more days? Something like, it's a very hard decision, and then you realize that, hey, these doctors, they're not trained to really prepare make people pass away peacefully, because it's all about saving lives.
Yeah.
So how do you so there's a movement, and also there's a research into like how to let one die the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that also ties to Buddhism as well, which I'm interested in. So I've been in one kind of workshop about meditation and about death, actually. And it's really a revelation of how so advanced these monks are in dealing with death and the mind, you know, when it just go and how you prepare a person for that.
Yeah. And what have you found in that exploration? I interrupted you, but with the monk.
Well, of course, I always reflect on my own mortality and to think of how would I want to pass away and how we need to talk about it. Because witnessing my friend passing was such a very profound experience, and I feel like how do I tell people like I want to die this way, but at the same time how to make this experience more common. I even think about how to make a movie on death, because it's not every day that you see people die. Right, but I think movie can be a tool to to reflect that. But at the moment, death and like sex or violence is a taboo. It's part of the taboo of cinema, right? But I feel like no, that shouldn't be. I mean, that should. I mean, we should be able to talk about it and reflect on it. And if we get rid of fear, maybe less fear. It's impossible to get rid of it, but if we feel less fear about death, maybe we'll feel more light and less anxious about life, I think.
Yeah, I connect a lot to that and this. We stop living because we are denying. It's like wanting to avoid the edge of a table and we're always falling from that cliff and we're always running from that. But that keeps us from actually enjoying what it's around us because we're always trying to run from death.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's so beautiful in that as well, because you're right that in films we see a lot of people dying, but very usually we don't see death in the sense that it's just. Somehow this manieristic way of calling someone, you know, it's like of killing, dying. But the moment of disappearing, of like this moment that you're describing so caringly.
It's a fictional death, no?
Yeah, exactly. It's just...
You see a lot of Hollywood death.
Yes, exactly. It's Hollywood death.
Which is sometimes glorified.
Yes.
Even.
Yeah, but like the moment that it's the most intense in my own experience as well, like of actually seeing that someone disappeared in this plane and how we relate to them now anew, the ones that stay in this dimension. I think that's a thing that it's so hard. And this is why it so often is not portrayed in films, like the actual dying, the actual leaving this plane of existence, whatever it's our belief on death.
Right. Well, I think there's a film, but very few. No one come to my mind was Kawase Naomi, right? Mm. She filmed, I think, her friend's death. I haven't seen it, but it's a rare chance for a filmmaker to do that, because who would want you to, I mean, Juan, would you allow people to shoot your death? Like, how would you feel with a camera in front of you before you die?
Yeah, that's...
Because will you still concerned about your looks and I feel that also showed that the camera is so powerful.
Yes, it is.
No, the lens is like this eye. Yeah,
it transforms what it's in front of the camera as much as it captures it. It's like this mediation, right, also of the moment. And actually this is something that right now we are always constantly to capture the memorable, and we have cameras all over and so on. But I feel that as much as it's so hard to think about death and capturing of death, is this mediation of life as well, constantly. So often we stop experiencing what it's in front, just in this mediation of the capturing. Also because of this fear of that moment dying, you know? There's also moments of small dyings, the moment that is gone, or the instant that it disappears, and somehow...
Right. You need to live ahead, right? That's the same thing, I think, as projection.
Yeah.
You need to project, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I think in this classroom in Japan that I'm teaching, we meditate together. Mm. And we just breathe and just try to not think and try to be nothing, like try to just observe this self breathing. Yeah, and I found that very useful to work. Yeah, whatever, you know, for whatever kind of job you have, a filmmaker, artist, or businessman.
Yeah. I guess it's this moment in which we reconnect with ourselves instead of all the happenings around, just by breathing, which is the essence of both life and death.
Right, and then you feel that everyone is the same, you know, just breathing entity. And sometimes you just think that you are more complex than others, you know, and you have more problem, or you are more smart or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think everybody is the same, you know, it's the same complex individual. And when you realize that, you feel more empathy. And, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's that when you make me think about that, it's this, how the connection, the maximum connection to everyone else doesn't matter. And in these times precisely in which there's so much racism and so much disconnection from each other, and there's this instant of breathing, not only between humans, but also this interspecies kind of relationship. But just the idea that the same air goes in and then keeps us alive, and that we are all in that instant of...
Right, right. Yeah. And sometimes that's very difficult, right? Because you have your own idea of moral issues, right? And for example, I really, really don't agree with many things here living in Thailand, right? I don't like the military dictatorship. I don't like this current prime minister, you know, it's like dictator, you know, all this. How do you approach this difference? You know, how do you start a dialogue when there's something that is totally off from your, you know, your idea? And yeah, so I think it's still an issue that, you know, what one can do. You know, for example, if you're a filmmaker, what can you approach? What can you present this dictatorship in cinema? You know, with this idea of equality. You know, not to attack, and that's quite an issue to think about. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big contradiction, and I think always, at least when I'm reflecting about how can we change things, how can we spark some sort of transformation, there is this contradiction of the amount of energy that is required to produce that transformation and the sense of clash that already produces, and at the same time thinking that our intention is actually that of bringing maybe change and balance to an unbalanced kind of system. And it's always full of contradictions in that.
Right, right. Because I always think of, you know, film as a human, as a being, right? And of course, when you talk about some gruesome or some unfair subject, you know, how this person gonna be in the world? You know, I don't want to make an angry person. You know, it's, you know, how to communicate? Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Don't know yet.
Yeah, it's a big question. It's a big question. And I'm not so sure there is a single answer, because at the end is this idea of multiplicity that somehow can allow us to find some sort of path. And back to the transformation idea. It's the, when we fix ourselves too much in our ideals, it's very hard to connect to anyone, even to ourselves, when we are just too fixated by what we are supposed to be and what we are supposed
exactly.
to be.
Exactly.
Hmm. Yeah. This is kind of the major contradiction of also trying to fixate something in a story, because at the end, it's like this moment of creating this one version of all of those multiple reflections, or capturing one instance of those many multiple instances.
Yes. And that's why for me, to make something open is more meaningful, right? Because when you start to narrow onto some opinion or some situation or even stories in the film, you start to get some to create a fence around, like, hey, you should think like this, you should think like that. Even to put a music into the film, no, you create some kind of lead to the audience, like, hey, you should feel like this. And so, but when you open it up, it can be interpreted, and it can, you know, even for myself, looking at the film a year from now, it's like I would approach it differently, you know. So I think there's a value in open up your creation, you know.
Like, yeah, and I think it, like, yeah, no, I didn't want to interrupt you, but it's just this perception of reality and the construction of reality. And so often realities that are so tightly constructed, they become like a sphere that has no irregularities to connect. No, if we think of a sphere, it just has one point of connection on a plane, and it's so hard to actually entangle organically with.
Right, right.
And
yeah. So, yeah, I think in the end, it's about organic. I mean, what's the noun for organic? to create something, or to live the life that is round, that is, that you don't underline things, you know, you just like keep it, you know, round, so that you can have a room to grow and
yeah.
and to evolve, right?
I think it's the concept of multiplicity and like often when we ask what we are or who we are, it's like we need to say one thing, or we need to define ourselves within a frame, and we are different things in different moments.
Exactly, yeah. And also, you know, I listened to this monk. He also said that, you know, for us, we always attach our value to work, our work. You know, we attach our identity to our work, like I'm a filmmaker, you know, I'm a producer, I'm a whatever, you know. And then, you know, we forget that we are also, you know, many other things, and that, you know, when, as I say, when you are getting older, you cannot work anymore as a filmmaker. You cannot, you know, get money, you cannot whatever, and you start to lose your self, because you attach yourself to that career, right? And then when you get old, you just like devastated, like you are like collapsed, because you attach yourself to that. Instead, maybe you can, if you don't think like that, you can enjoy, you know, hey, I'm old, I'm doing other things, I'm happy, whatever, you know. I'm happy sitting, I'm happy looking, you know. It's something that I think there's a trap into this contemporary value of, you know, your work and the way that the world's kind of want you to have some title.
Yeah, and that's such a trap, because often I also find myself when I'm writing and when I'm creating something new, and to try to separate myself from if this is going to be or not going to be, or if it's going to be produced or not going to be produced. And at the end, it's just this love that I have for these stories that just keeps me going. But then if one allows oneself to just get trapped by this idea of what will be or not be, it's just so difficult to even produce something that that is connected, or that is coming from the heart for real.
Yeah, and it ties to the reception, right? If your writing is rejected, your movie is got booed in festival, and you got one star in the review, you know, you're like, oh my God, I'm a bad director, you know. But who cares? Like, you shouldn't care about that. I mean, it's useless. You cannot please everybody. And if you enjoy that film, you enjoy it, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to say, but really, you can think like that. Yeah,
it's a constant reminder and exercise. Yeah, it's. I think at the end, that's the major trap. And if we go back to even the beginning of the conversation on nothingness, of almost the creation of that story and nothingness, like this idea of just allowing that story to happen and to see it happening as we are creating whatever is the writing or the actual shooting, or instead of thinking too much that that's one thing and it should be the one thing. I was listening to Bellata talking about the way that he approaches his filmmaking, I remember he was saying something about this one instant in which he realized that he could make one of his films because he found a personality. Like he found this one character that he thought, okay, now I can make my movie because the personality of this one person is going to drive the intention of the movie. That's a drive that it's like not the white page or the empty space, but like this, okay, there's a personality that drives my impulse.
Yeah, I think, Bella Tarr is such a Buddhist. I feel like he really listened to his heart and to follow it like a child, with really less distraction of other factors.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is also a way, like I mentioned before, you don't need to carry this big rock, of expectation of others. You just be yourself you can apply to many facets.
Exactly. I always find myself almost trying to understand the world that I'm trying to tell before I even write a story in that world, and so I get drawn by the research, and I work a lot about the world building of these stories, but before I actually know exactly what's that I'm gonna follow, like to try to be kind of an explorer in these worlds we are telling and the construction of reality, which is something you have explored so many times in different ways, and that you keep exploring with death and perception and memory. And I know you were also exploring a little bit that scientific connection to how we fix memories and how we deal with that also neurologically, which is fascinating when you think about our reality and our consciousness just floating in this interconnected universe of neurons and electric impulses, and it emerges.
Yeah, it's really fascinating for me, these topics, right? Because it's tied to movies, and I love movies. And and how the dream, how our brain works, because I always say that this movie is like a dream, it operates like a dream, like we try to mimic that experience, with technology as well, to create more and more towards our biological needs to dream. Yeah. So that's automatic.
Yeah. Yeah, I always kind of perceive movies as shared dreams, which is what is missing right now a little bit in the cinemas. That instant of being together in this dark space that somehow becomes like this shared dream, and then somehow we all had the same dream in slightly different ways because we all interpret the film in different ways and we assimilate it in different ways. But it's a shared space or a shared dream space.
For me, it's about enveloping of image and also sound, that's so precious when you design a film for cinema, just for the technology available, and now it's so easy, right? To get 4K camera, 8K cameras, but we are reducing the screen, what's going on?
Yes. Yeah, that's losing that mind space. I think we have to close our public conversation for now. It was such a pleasure, this conversation with you. This hour was just fantastic. We could keep talking.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Yeah, it's the same for me too. It's such a joy.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Too.
Thank you very much for taking the time with us and to have this moment of nothingness.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There's nothing like learning how to slow down, especially when the lesson is delivered by a masterful director like Apichat Pongrasatakul. If you want to hear from other directors, or indeed from a range of engaging filmmakers we've had the chance to talk to over the years, subscribe to our channel and visit our website at berlinale-talents.de. This podcast is brought to you in cooperation with Goethe Institute. It is produced by 4000 Hertz. Our editor is Vincent Förster. Music is by Rutger Reiners. Project coordination, Rabea Bockholt. Project management, Christine Tröstem and Florian Weghorn. And it was presented by me, Anna Serene. Thank you for listening.